Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, big mailbag today. It's going to be excellent, as usual. All answers 100% correct, guaranteed. Before we get started, let's play a game of Liar's Poker, Steve Versnick. Rob Gronkowski was on with the Mannings. You know, they do this thing on Monday Night Football on the ESPN2 where you get to watch with Peyton and, of course, Eli. So Gronk comes on, and among other things, he says, "Nah, I don't watch tape. I asked Tommy if he's watched it, and then I just run by people." So are you buying it? True or false? Gronk doesn't watch tape.
Do you still believe he faked the workouts last season before the season started?
I like that story. I actually thought that was brilliant.
I think it's brilliant, but I don't know if it's true now.
No. So you're saying he might be telling a little bit of a falsehood there. Here's what's funny about Gronk, and we talked a bit about this before, but like when I've talked to Brady, like just seriously about Gronk, and you know, at times when Gronk, you know, where Brady's like not cutting up about, you know, it's not the Tommy and Gronky show, right? He and others have told me one of the smartest football players that they've ever played with. Like the dude gets the ball. He gets ball. Like he, you know, and you can see that in his game. You can see it this year, you know, when Brady's checking to him twice and they got cover zero and, you know, he makes the route adjustments and stuff like that and winds up in a touchdown. One of the smarter players, I think, in the league and has been, had that reputation, but he runs from it. He kind of like acts like, "Yeah, I don't watch film. I just run by people."
It worked for him though. And he's done this for years. I mean, you know, what was it before the season, you talked to Gronk's dad.
Yeah.
And we aired the interview here on Sports Day Tampa Bay. And he talked about Gordy. how smart all his kids were, and it was, you know, getting educations and learning too, because sports may not always be there. And you know, he pushed that in his kids just as much as he did the athletics part of it. And the whole family is, and you look at the success that his siblings have had and everything else, and not just athletically, but, you know, it's a very smart family. And watch him play football. He's a smart player. He's not just running around out there. He makes the correct blocks. He makes the right reads.
Yeah.
He goes to the right spot based on this coverage and how I'm being played. I mean, if you watch him, you can see how smart he is as a player.
Yeah. Well, even in the one play in the Super Bowl, and him and Tom were on the same wavelength, but, you know, he's sort of running a flag route and the guy's playing, you know, outside technique. So he just pivots and Tom has time. And as soon as he comes back across the field, you know, Tom puts it on him. So, no, he's one of the smarter players. There's no question about that. And yeah, when I talked to Gordy, all his sons played professional sports. All of them made over 3.0. Gronkowski made like a 3.5 at Arizona in like business admin. I mean, the rumor is, and I think it's more than a rumor, but the word is that for all the money he's made, and he makes close to, what, $10 million a year of late, all the money that he's made in football, he hasn't touched. He has lived off endorsements. That's how well he has done. Endorsements in business. He has a lot of businesses, a lot of companies, and he does so well in those that, you know, football is sort of his side gig. But, yeah, he was great. He's always that guy. Whenever you see him, everybody says if we could all have more Gronkowski in us, we would never have a bad day. I thought he was entertaining. We ended up blogging it like we do everything, but I think it was complete bunk. I don't believe a word of it. I think he's very, very. In fact, I know he's really smart.
And, now, does he watch as much film as Tommy? I don't think so.
Nobody watches much film as Tom.
Yeah,
yeah. No one does that. I mean, Tom. You know, it's funny when you'll talk to Tom on Thursday, and they've got like maybe a 60-minute practice on Friday, and then they're done for the week. You know, walk through on Saturday. Tom will tell you, only got two really important days. Got a lot of film to watch. Got to study a lot, and you know, we still got two more days to prepare. And everybody else is like, "What are you talking about? We're going out to dinner tonight. We're going to do the walkthrough, and the week's over." Yeah, Brady, of course, grinds it. That's how he's become Tom Brady. But yeah, that was fun of Gronk. So we got a bunch of questions, of course, as we're speaking. The Rays are losing to Toronto. I don't think they're going to get their magic number clipped. I think the champagne's going to stay on ice for a little bit longer.
The magic number going into Tuesday night was 2 to clinch the playoffs.
Right.
In order to clinch a playoff berth, they needed to win. Oakland has to lose, and then either Boston or New York would have to lose as well.
Yeah.
So the Rays are losing in the ninth now. If they don't come back, then obviously you can't clinch it tonight. The magic number could drop to 1 tonight if that happens to clinch a playoff spot. The magic number is 5 to clinch the division. That all depends on them in Boston right now, who has the least amount of losses. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be, you know, right now, as it stands, I don't think the Yankees would be in the playoffs.
No, they would not. It would be Boston and Toronto in the wild card game at Fenway is where it would
be. The winner would play the Rays.
That's correct. That. Yep. And then the White Sox would play the Astros in the other side of the bracket.
So they may be seeing a lot of Toronto is what I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm. Well, they got one more game against them this afternoon, a 3 o'clock game. And then this wraps up a stretch. We were talking about pitching off the air beforehand, and we got some questions about that too we'll answer. But today's game wraps up 26 games in 27 days for the Rays. So you wonder why there's been a lot of players resting and a lot of off days and basically a month and you've had one off day, or 4 weeks essentially. You've had one off.
Yeah, they're a tired club. Yeah.
Now you're going to get an off day Thursday, and then you get another one on Monday as well. So that should help them. And then, you know, if you win the division, you'll get, you know, 3 days off. You know, you'll Sunday, and then your first game is Thursday for the playoffs. So you'll have 3 days off in between.
Yeah. Well, Wander Franco could be back as early as Friday, I guess. He's on assignment in Durham.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll help him.
That'll
need
help
that
the
spark.
Offense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think they need that energy, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a big part of what they do, and he's sort of, I mean, I know Brett Phillips has that too, but like he sort of filled Adames' role, I think.
But he gives a different type of energy, and I think it's more, you know, at production. The plate. And, yeah, I mean, he doesn't strike out, and he's you know,
he
making contact
happen.
and going deep into counts, and you know, it's that kind of energy and protection in the lineup that helps other guys too.
I mean, I think it was almost 40.
There's 43, I think, at-bats between strikeouts. I mean,
yeah, but he also had that on-base. He had that on-base streak that's still alive, I think, too.
Yeah, that's at 39, I think, right now?
38, 39,
something like
I think
that.
It's close to 40, yeah. So we'll see if he can continue that. But, they need him back in the lineup, if for nothing else, just for the production side of it. All right, so we got lots of questions in our mailbag. We'll get started.
Well, we talked about Gronk, so I'll start with this one. Ryan had asked, where does the trade for Rob Gronkowski rank in the best Bucks trades of all time? A John Gruden answer is preferred.
I'll tell you what, man. I'm trying to think of what John Gruden would say about Gronk.
Are you kidding me? I can get Gronk?
I don't even know.
Who would trade Gronk? The
guy was retired, right? Is he the most accomplished retired football player? Why don't we bring back Barry Sanders? Why don't they bring back Jim Brown? We're gonna get retired guys that can play. You know what I mean? Who else is out there?
Megatron.
Megatron. Calvin Johnson looks like he could play to me. I don't know if he's the best. I mean, when you talk about trades, you know, we'd have to really think about that one because there's been a lot of trades through the years. Now, nothing jumps off the page at me, but you know, when you get a Hall of Fame, first ballot Hall of Famer for a sixth or seventh rounder. From New England, that you then pay $10 million to, and he catches 2 touchdowns, 2 tutties in the Super Bowl, and then starts the next year with 2 tutties in each of the first 2 games. It's going pretty well. Let's just say that. It's going pretty well because then Belichick had to turn around and actually trade higher draft picks to get a couple of tight ends that they're using right now. So I would say they got the best of that trade. I don't think anybody really thought that Gronkowski, you know, from a physical standpoint, would be able to hold up much less, you know, last year played 20 games, and he seems to be in even better shape now. I mean, still, you look at the, 18 surgeries or something that he had throughout his career in New England. I mean, there was a reason why he quit. It's obvious that it wasn't just the injuries, although he did take a year to heal up some of those bones. But clearly, I think the whole, you know, Patriot way beat him down. And he's having a lot more fun now. But I can't think of many. I mean, they traded a couple of number ones for Keyshawn Johnson. They won a Super Bowl. I know people may not have liked Keyshawn, but he was very productive.
What about trading for John Gruden?
Well, there's your best trade, yeah. There you go.
I'll tell you what, you guys forget, man. They gave up 2 ones, 2 twos, and $8 million for me.
Aside from the large compensation package, I would say that would be the best one. Absolutely, you do it again. You trade all those draft picks to win a Super Bowl. You know, so yeah, I think. But player from a player standpoint. I don't know. That's a little harder. They haven't exactly gotten over on a lot of trades. I tell you some I didn't like. How about Darrell Revis? A 1-4. He played one season. They paid him $16 million. They rehabbed his ACL. He made the Pro Bowl, and then he went to New England. That worked out well. Greg Schiano didn't have any players. That was not so smart. Darrell Revis for 1 year.
All right, Tommy, as we're talking tight ends, he says, do you see the Bucs using O.J. Howard as trade bait if they're not going to use him and get something in return? Or will O.J. stay with the Bucs all season?
I think he's here. I mean, you never say never. It would depend if there's a bunch of injuries or something and they needed a piece of somebody else's team. I mean, I suppose that. But first of all, it's a long season. He's coming off a torn ACL. We don't know what's going to happen, you know, to those. Right now, it's clear to me that the Bucs think that the way to win and their best playmakers are their three receivers, right? They, you know, talk about Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Antonio Brown. So those guys are going to be on the field all the time, okay? So you're going to have 11 personnel. You have one running back and one tight end. That's just the way they're going to go. So if something were to happen to one of those receivers, yeah, you could go with Scotty Miller. You could go with Tyler Johnson. You got some guys that can come off the bench, right? But are they going to play as much as Antonio Brown? Are they going to play? In other words, I think at that point, you might decide to go 12 personnel and go with two tight ends, which would be Gronk and O.J. Howard, which is the way they started last season. Eventually, they worked Antonio Brown in there. And then, of course, O.J. got hurt. So then it was Cam Brate. I think OJ's here all season. I think you made that decision when you picked up his fifth-year option at $6 million. You know, he could do some things. You just don't know, man. 17 games, you know. And remember, Gronkowski, I mean, until last year, it had been a minute since he made it through a whole season. So you add an extra year to his body and playing football. You add an extra game to the season. I think you're going to need all these tight ends. They would have said the same thing last year. In fact, people did about Cameron Brate. They're like, hey, man, Cameron Brate's playing like 11 snaps a game or 6 snaps a game. Why don't they trade him? Well, they didn't trade him because week 5, O.J. Howard had a season-ending injury. You know? Remember this. Your quarterback is Tom Brady. Even though he could play to 50, he probably won't. But you have a chance to win a Super Bowl right now.
Mm-hmm.
You do not get rid of good players when Tom Brady is at quarterback.
You're all in. So the only way you're getting rid of him is if you're getting a piece to help now back, not a draft pick for later, not a project. If you're trading him, it's because there's a piece you need.
It's making you stronger, yes. Yeah. That's right. Say there's a corner, you know. But here again, who are you trading him to? I mean, any team that would want O.J. Howard knows they're renting him because he's a free agent. So if I'm going to invest in O.J. Howard, I got to be a contending team myself, you know? So who's giving up something if they're a contending team to you? You don't want the draft picks. You want to win. You need a player. I just don't see how that – I don't see a scenario where they would trade him. I don't. I mean, and trades are hard to make, and there's not that many of them every year. We always talk about them. It just never seems to really transpire that much. But, no, my guess is that they made that decision. OJ is working himself back into shape. I think he'll be a big factor in this season going forward at some point. He looked really good in the one play that he made, but I don't see him going anywhere.
All right, Cameron tweeted us and said, it seems like teams are abandoning the run and dropping back 50 times with max protection. With the current uncertainty in the secondary, what can the Bucks do to counter that? What do you think they'll do?
Well, I mean, I think they're caught. They're kind of caught between a rock and a hard place. I mean, if teams don't want to try to run the ball on them because they're so good against the run, and they're, you know, in their first the last 2 years, they're second now. I mean, teams aren't, you know, I think Atlanta rushed 20 times and they averaged like 3.5 or so, which wasn't very good. Even less probably for Dallas. The thing is, you know, you got to stop the run. You still have to play the run. What they did a better job of in this last game, the tackling got a little bit better. They didn't let anybody get behind them. So you kind of pick your poison. So it's like this. It's like, okay, we're going to play off these receivers. They're going to complete a lot of balls. I mean, they've attempted 104 passes the first two games. 104 in the first two games against the Bucks, and completed a hell of a lot of them. But they weren't for, you know, a ton of yards. I mean, aggregate they were, but in the, you know, it's 5, 6, 7. Now you want to get off the field on third down. You don't want to give, but they didn't give up any chunk plays. If you come up and they're going to throw it, they want to throw it quick, but if you come up, they might throw it over your heads. So they're making teams sort of earn it. And then if they get them behind the sticks, if they get them in 3rd and 6 or 3rd and 7 or something longer, they're bringing blitzes. You know, they're bringing the inside linebackers. I just think that both Atlanta and Dallas, especially Ezekiel Elliott, you know, did a really good job picking up Devin White and picking up Lavonte David. Their blitzes just didn't work. They got there, but they didn't work. But they're getting pressure. You know, I had this conversation with Arians, and they're sitting here with 2 sacks, and that's 31st in the league, and, you know, they're 30th in passing yardage and all this stuff. And he goes, look, we're still affecting the quarterback. We're not getting them on the ground. We only got 2 sacks, but we had a bunch of tip balls. 2 of them ended up being intercepted. You know, Vita Vea is forklifting guys into the quarterback's lap. You know, teams aren't hitting big passing plays down the middle of the field anywhere. They did have 2 pick-sixes. So, you know, I don't know what they can do. If teams want to throw it out to the perimeter and make you tackle, you'll do it, I guess, all day. You're keeping them out of the end zone. And then you play really good red zone defense, which they've managed to do. They've gotten a couple turnovers. There's really, I mean, you know, that there's not a whole lot except play tighter coverage, make the guy pull the ball down a few times, you know, maybe get to the quarterback and sack him. But I don't think they're that. They don't seem that worried about it. You know, they seem like, you know, we're gonna tackle better. We're gonna if this is what people want to do. And I expect the Rams to do it too, because the Rams, they're the ones that started. I mean, Sean McVay came in here and threw it 51 times and didn't even try to run, and, you know, wound up winning a 3-point game. But you just got to play better. I mean, you know, that's really it. It's just play tighter coverage, make sure you tackle, you know, keep trying to win at the line of scrimmage, and, you know, get off the field. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is they're letting teams have too much time of possession. You want to get the ball back to Brady as fast as you can. And having said all that, they're averaging almost 40 points a game. So, you know, I mean, we're nitpicking a little bit. But I did write a column that says, is this a Super Bowl defense? To me, it doesn't look like one. No matter whether it's teams had all year to figure this out and they've made adjustments, or, you know, some of the guys aren't playing fast, or, you know, they're older players. I mean, I don't know. But teams clearly, this is a copycat league, and this is the way that teams want to attack them, because they want to stay away from the middle of that defense, the front seven inside. And so what are your options? I would do the same thing. I'd say, hey, those guys out there, they don't want to tackle. Let's throw it out there. Those big guys, they don't want to run to the sideline. Let's make them run all day. Let's get those guys worn out, you know. That's what I would do. And I think that's become the consensus about how to play the Bucks.
All right, we talked a lot yesterday on the podcast about Ronald Jones and Leonard Fournette, and Greg had asked, when Ronald Jones is on the field, doesn't it tip the hand of the defense that they're going to run the ball? As a defensive coordinator, why wouldn't you send a blitz whenever he's in the game? When Fournette is in the game, there's at least a possibility of a run or a pass.
Yeah, I think they're kind of falling into that a little bit, and I think you are seeing a lot of blitzes. We certainly saw one, you know, on. And here's the thing I didn't get. Second and 20. Why is he in the game on second and 20? That I don't get, because he's not a good blocker. You know, he's not your best running back as a receiver. I thought Giovanni Bernard was here not just for third down. Obviously, you can say, well, he's our third down back or a two-minute guy. But second and 20. I mean, put him in the game, you know, because A, he's a good blocker, and B, he can win, you know, on any route from the line of scrimmage if he has to. So you're limited. I mean, you're limited. You know, do you trust Jones? Do you trust him in pass protection? I would run every time he was in the backfield. I think I'd run straight downhill at him. If they hand him the ball, I'm going to make the tackle. If they don't give him the ball, I'm going to run over him on the way to the quarterback. But, yeah, if my assignment is Ronald Jones, I'm coming, you know. I mean, that's just what I would do. And I think teams are starting to exploit that, you know. He's going to have to, you know, stick his face in the fan, as they say, and block some people and knock them on their backsides. Or he's just not going to have much of a role unless it's, you know, you're up two touchdowns and you're trying to salt the game away, and he's just the guy that's going to run clock for you.
All right, Ali asked, do you think we'll see more of Giovanni Bernard going forward with the other two running backs making mistake after mistake?
I can't imagine you could see less. I got to believe that you know, and you talked about this, you know, he is an older player. It is a 17-game season. He looks great to me. He's still learning a new offense, but honest to goodness, I mean, when they get second and long or third down, I mean, he's got to be in the game, you know. And I think that, you know, Arian said something the other day that was sort of telling. He goes, look, we're not going to throw 100 balls to our running back, you know. Well, that's what New England did, you know, and that's what Giovanni could do. But, again, they want Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Antonio Brown to be the guy, you know, that – or the guys that make the plays. They want to put the ball in their hands. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing to have somebody next to Brady that can pick up blitzes and you know, be an outlet for him. But we haven't found what his role is outside of the few third downs. I mean, he played in the two-minute drill against Dallas and made two plays that helped them win the game on that final drive. So, I don't think you see less. I think you'll see more of him. I don't know that there's a conscious decision. They love Fournette. Tom trusts him. You know, that first pass in the first game off his hands notwithstanding, he likes Lenny. And Lenny absolutely stoned a guy, and he made a 17-yard completion to Brown, you know, which was his only catch that night. But, so Fournette can do some things. But, yeah, I think that going forward – and maybe this is the game. I think you're going to see Giovanni more. I really do.
Diego tweeted us, said, last Sunday versus the Falcons, Tom Brady threw to 10 different players. Mike Evans, Gronk, Godwin, Fournette, Bernard, OJ, Antonio Brown, Tyler Johnson, Cam Brate, and Ronald Jones. Is that a record?
I don't think so. It's probably close to it. I remember a lot of games we had 8 and 9s. I'd have to go back and look if we've had 10. You only got so many active players, right? So if you've got 3 running backs, 6 receivers, what's the most he could throw to, right? So 3 running backs, they've had 6 receivers up, that's 9.
Tight ends or?
2 tight ends, 10, 11.
I mean, you can always put a defensive tackle in at running back and pass it to him and a fake or an offensive lineman.
But, I mean, even just by the eligibles, right, that are active on Sunday. So, you know, 3 running backs, 6 wide receivers, that's 9. 2 tight end, 3 tight ends because they have Brate, that's 12. So the maximum would be 12 in any given game.
You could also have a tackle eligible or things like that.
You could, but I'm just meaning of the skilled players, right? If you were throwing just to the receivers, running backs, and tight ends that are up, the maximum's 12. So you can't go much higher than that.
I doubt it's a record, but it shows you how Brady distributes the ball. I mean, 5 targets for Evans and everybody else was 4 or less. I mean, you know, you know, he spreads the ball around, which is what makes him so effective.
Yep. Keeps guys involved.
Keeps guys involved and keeps the defense guessing because he throws to everybody.
Yeah, and I think he you know, sort of, he said this, it's a simple game, but it's hard to execute, is that, you know, he plays chess out there. It's like, you know, too deep, we'll hand it off. You play us up, we're going to throw it over your head. You play us inside, we're throwing it outside. You play outside leverage, we're going inside. Like, that's, you know, the defense kind of for him determines where the ball is going. He's going to find his matchup. And, you know, but I still think there's a part of him. I don't say he forces the ball, but he absolutely is Brady's smart. Like, he's cognizant of, hey, I got to get this guy involved. Now, he won't force it, but I told you the fantasy thing. I was talking to a guy. Actually, it's one of the producers of NFL 360. You know that series, the Emmy Award-winning NFL 360? So this producer guy was calling me, and he listened to our podcast, and he's a big Bucks fan. And remember I said the other day that my daughter had Mike Evans in fantasy?
Yep.
And she was going to bench him. I said not. And he goes, I had the same dilemma, and I heard the podcast, so I didn't bench him. Thanks for the two touchdowns. I think that Brady is very cognizant of those guys' goals, of their aspirations. He didn't deliberately go away from Evans. They doubled him like they're going to do every game, the first game. Godwin and Brown, you know, were the ones that got over 100 yards or whatever. Gronk had a big day. But I knew that he was going to get Evans involved. And what was funny is that the other thing is that when he gets to the 1 yard line or inside the five, he's not running it. He's calling a running. He's going to throw the ball. And I think he sees that also as a payoff. Like, hey, watch me. Like, most teams are like, well, the field's awfully short. You know, it's really tight down there. No. That never crosses Brady's mind. Brady's like, I'm going to reward somebody. I'm going to get this tutty for myself. And I'm not going to turn and hand it off to a guy at the 1 yard line. And so that's how Evans, you know, got touchdown catches of 1 in 3 yards, you know, like, he rewarded him. I mean, he knows if I got Evans out, and Evans, this one route, the first route he ran, it's like this little pivot route where he goes inside.
That was
and pivots
so beautiful.
Back. And you remember, it's like, wait a minute, this guy's 6'5". Like, the dude broke his ankles. It's like playing basketball. The guy's on the ground. When he made the move, he fell down.
That was a beautiful route. That was so well executed. I mean,
he left him. I wondered how he got so open, and then I looked at the tape, and I'm like, holy cow, like, dude fell down. He got twisted around. It was great. Evans has really made himself he was already a really good receiver, a terrific receiver, on his way to the Hall of Fame. You know, Brady has said this a bunch of times, and I don't think Brady is prone to hyperbole. I've heard Brady call Mike Evans a future Hall of Fame quarterback or receiver. I've heard him say that. He says he's a Hall of Famer. I think he believes it. I mean, look, this could be the eighth season. If he does what he always does, 8 straight years to start his career with 1,000 yards. You know, obviously, if you do that every season for you play 10 years or 12 years, you're going to be there. But I think he has so much respect for Mike in his game. And Mike, to his credit, is always trying to get better. Like, he's not satisfied with, you know, whether it's his body or his route running or, you know, he's a guy that's always hungry, always trying to get better. So it's been fun to watch those.
And one last thing on Brady, if you remember last year, getting Antonio Brown his bonus.
Yes, absolutely, with pop passes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they could have. You know, that was funny because the choice was we hand the ball to Ronald Jones and he gets his 1,000 yards, or we've got $250,000 that's owed Antonio Brown if we get him three more balls and they ran, like, pop passes, you know, from behind the line of scrimmage to give him those receptions and give him the money, which is – I've never seen anything like that. First of all, most organizations wouldn't want to do it because they'd be like, wait a minute, that's coming out of our – that's coming out of our – which Glazer is that coming from? And then secondly, just to have the awareness, right, that how many you need? Three? Okay, watch this. 1, 2, and 3. Okay, thanks. That's 250. What a nice guy. You know, you just put $250,000 in my pocket. That's phenomenal. But that's how you breed loyalty, folks.
Justin tweeted us and asked, if Richard Sherman is signed, what is the logical timeline to see him starting in a game?
Well, they say he's in good shape. They say he's gotten down to a fighting weight of like 195, which is, you know, about as low as he's been that he would want to play at. Now, you know, he's going through counseling. He's got a bunch of misdemeanor charges. So I don't think there's anything from the league standpoint that they would do, because whatever he's facing is not going to be adjudicated, and the league usually waits for the court systems and the legal process to run its course. Nobody is – I mean, it looks bad, right? It was captured on film, and it's a terrible moment. It's out of character for him. DUIs, if you're convicted, understand me, you know they can do whatever they want to, because it doesn't require a conviction. But DUIs now are 3-game suspensions since 2020, so that may come to play at some point. But I would think that it'd be pretty quick. I mean, I don't know what he's doing. He's been in counseling, so I don't know if, you know, he's kept himself in shape. His weight is down. I mean, you don't bring him in here to sit. As soon as he's eligible, you may not play him, you know, 75 plays the first day, but I think he would play pretty sooner than later. I mean, because you're not signing him. Look, I don't know that they're going to sign him unless they have another injury to begin with, you know. You do kick the tires on these guys. You see what their mindset is. You ask them about when are you going to be available, are you going to be able to play, that sort of thing. So that sounds to me like what they were doing with, you know, with him. But I mean, and I don't know that he's the kind of, I don't know, he's not the corner that he was, you know, at 33 that he had been. But, you know, if you go that route, you got to play him. And then you got to say, okay, well, what is Sean Murphy bunting when he comes back? Well, now he's just your third, corner. You know, I mean, will Sherman accept a role that's less than a starter? I don't know. These are all questions you got to ask the guy. But as far as playing, I mean, if he says he can play, he hasn't had training camp. But I mean, you're gonna, you know, we're in the season. I mean, you're getting them to play. There's no warm-ups here. You know, you'll if you do that, if you pull the trigger, you're gonna need him to play fairly soon. Maybe not a full game, but he's gonna get in there. I think Jordan Whitehead, who had been out for a while, had been running, but he had, you know, he'd had the hamstring situation in training camp. I think they played him about 2/3 of the snaps the other day, so they didn't give him the full load, but they gave him a lot, you know. And he didn't miss all of training camp and preseason.
All right, Ellis tweeted, so this past offseason, should the competition committee have focused on which penalties are reviewable, what exactly is roughing the passer, or how pass interference penalty has a huge impact, instead of, checks the sheet, taunting?
Mm. Yeah, I don't like the taunting thing. I don't know where they were headed with that, but it looks bad to me. I'm glad that they got, you know, when they're reviewing pass interference, I'm glad they got rid of that rule. That seems silly. I've seen it's such a broad interpretation of what taunting is or isn't, you know. I mean, what did Edwards do? Like, Edwards got a taunting penalty, I think, for laying up the ball over the goalpost or something of that extent. I mean, like, I've seen guys get up from tackles and just, like, look at the guy they tackled or got tackled by and go, yeah, and you know, motion something with their, I mean, and they throw a flag. The officials don't know what it is. It should have been more clearly defined. The owners didn't do the game in any favors, because now you've got guys getting not just penalized, but they're getting fined. This is the other thing. Like, they take a big chunk out of your paycheck, you know? So I must have missed the taunting seminar that they gave all the players, because officials come in and they go over the points of emphasis and the new rules and stuff. But some of the penalties I've seen on it just seem silly. You know, they're playing football, for gosh sakes. I mean, there's going to be...
Well, I wonder if part of it wasn't the Antonio Winfield in the Super Bowl, which, you know, obviously you've got 100 million people watching that game.
It was, I mean, but I mean...
But there was a reason
thing,
he did that, too, which, I mean, you know...
Yeah, Tyreek Hill did it early in the season,
right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Don't we want players to have personality? I mean, isn't that what the games have become now?
No.
That's what they market.
Well, they don't market the individuals.
No, but
you know,
but they love it when the individuals are on Madden's cover or in this commercial, and Tom Brady's in Subway commercials, and they love that. Leagues love that stuff. They want their players.
Yeah, there's not that many, though. Here's what I know about the NFL.
Patrick Mahomes is in State Farm commercials, and Aaron Rodgers, and they love that.
Well, they love your quarterbacks and things like that, but here's what I know about the NFL, okay? And think about this for a minute, okay? NBA, you know, they're all corporations, right? Every guy on the team is a corporation. I mean, it just, you know, we know them, we see them, all that stuff. What happens in the NFL? You've got guys who go to games, and if their socks aren't pulled up to a certain level, they get fined. Why? It's a uniform violation. Who cares? We care. Why? We don't want anybody standing out. We're going to put a helmet over your head. If you're wearing a face shield, hopefully that's even better. We want people to root for the names on the front of the jerseys, not the back. The quarterback's a little different, I'll grant you, because he's got the ball on every play. People know who he is if he's doing with Jake from State Farm. But for the most part, they don't want these guys to stand out. Owners want the game to be what's celebrated, not the players. They have no interest in making anybody any money except themselves. And that's why they have all these rules. You can't take your helmet off during a game. Can't take it off. Levante David was mad at himself because he dropped an interception that would have been caught by his teammate had he not gotten in the way. And he took his helmet off. He wasn't showing anybody up. He wasn't saying, "Hey, Ma, look at me," you know. His parents are deceased. But, I mean, you know, my point is he just took his helmet off out of frustration. That cost him over $12,500. For what? Because he took his helmet. What's so bad about that? No one's going to come up and hit him between the whistles. You know what's bad about it? They don't want his face on camera. They want him to look like everybody else. Can't take your helmet off. We don't want celebrations. It's the no fun league. You know? Because everybody, when this guy gets suspended or this guy's out of the league or this guy, next man up. Next man up, we're rooting for their teams. We don't care. We're not about the, these are the owners now. They're the ones that make the rules. Why are they so restrictive? What's wrong with a little bit of passion, a little bit of celebration? What's wrong with it? What's wrong with it is it's not about them. They don't want to make it about the players. There's going to be stars. There's going to be the Patrick Mahomes and the quarterback, but they're quarterbacks for the most part. You know? It's the only league that has that sort of uniformity where, like I said, literally if a guy's sock is not pulled up to the right level, the right length, he gets fined because he doesn't look like everybody else. Crazy.
All right, UK Bucks asked, Rick, can we hear John Gruden's thoughts on the start of the season for both the Raiders and the Bucks?
Wow, we got a lot of Gruden requests tonight, huh?
We did.
I should have gotten in my Gruden face. Here's what I like what he said the other day is how, and I don't remember the exact words, but he was something like, I've been beating the drum for Derek Carr for a long time, okay? First of all, John, no, you haven't, okay? Your favorite quarterback is anyone but the guy playing for you, you know? I mean, it was crazy, right? It was like, I like Carr. I like all kinds of Carr. I named my car Derek. You know why? Because I get home, I drive in my Derek car, and I take my Derek car and I drive it to my house. So when I get done, I drive my Derek Carr back to the facility so I can coach Derek Carr. So my car's named Derek, if you want to be honest. Like, come on, man. And even Derek Carr knows that Derek Carr is not John Gruden's favorite quarterback. He said as much. He goes, they're looking to replace. They signed Marcus Mariota. They gave him like $8 or $9 million to be the backup. You know? We might need Marcus Mariota. This guy, I'm not buying it. As far as the Bucks are 2-0. Think we might have a Bucks Raiders Super Bowl, man. We're gonna turn the tide a little bit here, and then all we'll hear is like they fired me. Raiders traded me. They didn't fire me. These guys fired me. Wouldn't that be something if all these years later, the Bucks and the Raiders got together in a Super Bowl, only this time Gruden was on the other side.
All the storylines.
Can you imagine?
Oh,
I'm telling you, life is weirder than anything you could script, right? It just is.
Mm-hmm.
What if John Gruden is traded from the Raiders to the Bucs and beats the Raiders. And then 20 years later, 20-something years later, he's a coach of the Raiders who got fired by the Bucs and he beats the Bucs. That'd be great. Or, I got to play Tom Brady. What? You got to be kidding me, man. I got to play Tom Brady. What about the Tuck rule? I don't know that he'd want to see Tom Brady.
The way Tom Brady's playing right now, I don't think anybody does.
Not in a Bucs uniform anyway. Yeah, no, I don't think so either. It's funny to me, like, and I'm a big Lamar Jackson guy. Like, I think Lamar's great, and that was an unbelievable game. I don't know what Patrick Mahomes was thinking with that one interception. Just please. But, you know, him and Derek, you know, Derek Carr had a good game, and that was an exciting game. And so now it's like you turn on the shows, and everybody's like, Derek Carr might be the MVP of this league. Listen, Lamar Jackson means more to his team than any player means in any league. And now he's over the hump. He beat Kansas City. He's on his way. Might be the MVP of the league. Meanwhile, you've got a 44-year-old guy who's thrown 9 touchdowns in 2 weeks, right? And has won 9 games of 30 points or more to set an NFL record. And nobody's talking about him being an MVP. I mean, my goodness. Really?
Didn't we learn a couple years ago about 2 weeks into a season you can't predict the MVP? Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Though he should have got it that year just for putting on Deshaun's jewelry.
Well, that's a different MVP, but
that was fun. But seriously, it's like Brady fatigue. I mean, really? Like, are you forgetting what, you know, let's see what Lamar Jackson is when he's 44. You know? That's all I get. Doesn't that factor into it? Shouldn't you say, hey, wait a minute. This guy that's leading the NFL in touchdown passes, he's 44.
They're saving all the Brady talk for next week when it's Patriots week.
I guess. Yeah, they're trying to pace themselves.
You know, they got to come up with something else before it's, you know, next week is all Brady. That's all you'll see.
I was listening to Good Morning Football, and they even admitted, they go like, wait a minute, you know who you don't talk about? Like the guy that's leading the league in touchdowns. They said, listen, let's just do this. Let's just put a goat in studio and put like a 12 jersey on it so that we're recognizing him every day. Because you could literally recognize him every day. You could do a special on the guy every day. That's how unique he is.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, we'll switch to the Rays now, and they did lose 4-2 on Tuesday night, so they will not, as you're listening to this, have clinched a playoff berth yet, but they could do so today with an afternoon game against the Blue Jays. But Les had tweeted us and says, Rick, what team scares you the most in the American League? Is it Houston, or maybe whoever wins the wild card game?
I mean, they're familiar with whoever wins the wild card game, but I think Toronto right now to me is the scariest team that's going, because I think they've absolutely got an ace. They've got some pretty good pitching. They hit better than anybody. They're not going to be intimidated. None of those teams that come out of the East are going to be intimidated by the Rays. They see them too many times every year, right? So I would tend to lean that way. To me, if you get in a series with Houston, if you get that far and they're not beating the drums or cheating, you got a shot, you know? I mean, they did pretty well 2 or 3 years ago, whenever it was, 2019, I guess. Had they not cheated, I think they might win that series. But I don't know. I tend to think it's going to be that first. If they get – whoever wins the wild card, if they get through that series, I think they're going to be fine. I'm not – There's nobody that I don't think they can beat, you know. I just think it's the familiarity with each other, you know. Things happen. I don't know. I would be nervous about Toronto right now. I think you got to be playing well. I think that's the first thing. Like, don't if you play, first of all, somebody who makes the playoffs, they're probably playing well. But if you're, Toronto's been hot for a while. You know what I mean? Like they,
but can they keep that up for two more weeks?
Well, yeah. Why not?
They can't. I'm not saying they. I'm not saying they can't. But right. You know, we know. I mean, the Rays a month ago were scorching hot, and
yeah, they played Baltimore though a bunch.
Well, they
you
did.
Know what I mean? Like,
but they were scoring a lot against Boston. They were scoring. You know.
Yeah.
I mean, they had what 10, 11 games in a row of like 8 runs. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, no, they were on fire. They were on fire. Their bats were hot, and then that comes and goes. Offense comes and goes. But I just all year long, I look at the numbers like you look at the whole season, right? And when those guys get up and they flash the batting averages and the RBIs and the home runs, it's hard to believe what the production that they Simeon, Bichette, Gurriel. I mean, it's unbelievable some of the numbers these guys have. You know, Guerrero, there's just one after the other. Like, they all could be MVPs.
I think run differential is big in baseball. And, you know, the Astros are by far the biggest in the American League. They've scored 2 more runs than the Rays and given up about 37 less runs.
A lot deeper pitching, I know that.
Yep. The Toronto's about the same as the Rays within a couple of runs. The Yankees run differential is what plus 30. They don't score much. I mean, they have okay pitching. The Yankees lineup, amazing how much money's in that lineup. They're one of the lowest in baseball.
Right.
We really
look it's the thing the Rays do so well is that they battle you. They'll take their walks. Mm-hmm. They'll 2 strike hits. Somebody said the other day, I was listening on TV, and I think it was the Red Sox manager that said, you watch the Rays and pay attention to how many hits they get with 2 strikes. It's like they're the best 2 strike hitting team I've ever seen. And I think that might be true. And it's a great question. I just always believe that first series, if you can get out of that first series, you know, everybody gets better, right? You take a step up in class each time you win until you get to the World Series. And then you're going to play the other best team in baseball. And they did that last year, and they ran into the Dodgers. I still think the Dodgers are the deepest team I've seen. I don't know if they're going to win. I mean, the Giants have had a better record, I guess. But to me, they get in a postseason. I still would favor the Dodgers in the National League.
It's going to be funny when the Dodgers get beat in the wild card game, and they have a 20-game lead on the team they get beat by. It's going to be hilarious.
Well, yeah, maybe.
I mean, in the wild card, they're up like, 16 and a half games, something like that?
I know. That would be great if it happens. I just don't think it's...
They're 15 and a half up on the Cardinals, so...
Right. Yeah. No, that'd be great. But I don't know. I think if you can just get out of that first series, then you can settle down and say, okay, we belong here, you know, playing good baseball. We can beat anybody. We're one series away from playing for the championship, right? I don't know. I just feel like Toronto is one of those teams that they have such a great offense that if you have a bad night, if your pitchers have a bad night, you know, I've seen them, you know, what was it, a couple days ago, they had a 3-hit shutout against them. I don't know how they did that, but they did it.
The one thing about Toronto is their bullpen is not that good. If you can get
you know
to
what
their
else
bullpen,
isn't good? Their defense isn't good either.
Yeah, they can
They're
struggle
just okay.
at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bo Bichette can kind of go up and down.
He can throw some balls away, yeah.
Yeah. So, well, we'll transition. It's Story had asked, who's your team MVP pick for the Rays playoff run this year, and are you concerned about the Rays pitching rotation in a 5 or 7-game series?
Yes, and Wander Franco.
What'd you think of Shane Baz the other night?
Oh, he was ridiculous. I want to see it. Tell me that no one who made that deal with the Pirates is still in baseball. I mean, seriously, like, let me get this straight. You traded Meadows, who's got 100-something RBI, Austin Meadows. You traded Glasnow, who before the Tommy Johns was the ace of the staff, and didn't he pitch in the All? Did he pitch in the All Star game?
Well, he probably would have been an All Star. He was hurt before then, so.
But I mean, he absolutely was like a dominant right hander, and now Shane Baz comes out of the weeds, and the guy started in Double A, and he goes out there. His stuff is ridiculous. Like 100 mile an hour fastball, change up.
He threw one bad pitch.
He was like 70-something percent strikes.
The first home run was 96 and up in the zone. I mean, okay, yeah. Tip your cap.
Right.
But, I mean, he hung one slider for the second home run.
Yeah, he spun one up there, yeah.
But one pitch in that appearance. His major league debut was bad.
But his stuff and his poise, like he didn't, like that didn't jolt him, right? Some guys would give a home run, and the next thing you know, they can't find the plate. He was a strike thrower. He threw strikes with all his pitches. He had those guys guessing. They didn't know. They couldn't adjust. He was dominant. Like, and that's the thing. Like, to me, I always say this, like, special shows up fast. Like, you don't have to wait for it. It's just, boom, there it is. You know, you see it right away. There it is. Guy came up there. Wander Franco. There it is.
Remember last year in the playoffs, Shane McClanahan made his major league debut. And now yeah. Shane Baugh 2 weeks before this year's playoffs. And you're like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, you see.
But I think unlike McClanahan, like I think you could see a situation where Baugh is starting game two.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, you know what? We're going to put this kid out here. He's going to go three or four innings, but we're, by God, he's better than Patino. We're going with him.
You got McClanahan, Patino, and Baugh. And maybe Rasmussen if you need a four starter.
Yeah. Maybe Rasmussen. I mean, depending on how Patino goes, I mean, Rasmussen maybe.
He hasn't pitched that well lately either, though.
No, well, he didn't pitch that bad. He didn't pitch that bad last night, though.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was okay. Got in some jams. He got out of the jams, but he got in some jams.
Yeah, but on the whole, in the 8 or 9 starts they've given him, he's done okay.
Oh yeah, no, he's been fine this year. But I'm just saying for playoffs that I don't know if you want him starting.
I can see Baugh. I mean, how is Baugh's? Now I know when Glasnow, like when he was. I'm trying to remember because it seems like it was a long time ago. How much experience did Glass has before he was in postseason? Had he pitched a lot?
Yeah, because I mean, I don't think his first year they made the playoffs.
Okay. I'm
trying to remember when his first season was, but let me look.
Well, he got hurt. He was pitcher of the month, and then he got hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wouldn't. It's a big spot to put the kid in, but man, does he have stuff? And poise.
Yeah, well, you forget Tyler Glasnow pitched some in Pittsburgh before he got here. He didn't make his major league debut with the Rays.
Right. Yeah, I know.
So I mean, he made his first appearance in 2016.
Well, the Rays calculus is this: young in talent trumps experience and not as talented.
Mm-hmm.
That's their calculus, and you know what? I don't disagree. I don't. Mm-hmm. If you've got that kind of stuff, it'll win anywhere as long as you don't lose your head out there. You know, they'll keep you calm. The guys behind you will back you up with their defense. You know, and every guy's different, but I don't know. Baugh didn't look like he broke a sweat, you know? Did you see his old man, by the way?
Mm-hmm.
Dude is jacked up. My God. Looks like a pro wrestler. Be like, you want to throw today? Yeah, okay, Dad. Sure.
All right, rooting for UF asked. Thoughts on Kevin Kiermaier taking the Blue Jays scouting card at the plate the other night? And if you didn't see this, so Kiermaier was thrown out at home and kind of a bang-bang play. And the catcher's scouting card, which basically has the, you know, your pitching scouting on or the hitting scouting on the Rays, fell out of his pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Kiermaier picks it up, says he thought it was his card that fell out of his pocket where he keeps it. Which for him would have, you know, where you line up defensively based on hitters in this.
Right.
But he never gave the card back.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts? Says he didn't look at it, but he did hand it to somebody else.
Okay, my thoughts are, and you said this before the podcast, stop talking, okay? This is not, look, you're not under a court of law. No one asked you to put your hand on a Bible. Shut up about it, all right? The other thing is, I don't know, is there an etiquette like, oh, I'm sorry, you dropped your scouting report on home plate. Here you go. I don't know. I mean, to me, he has plausible deniability. He did slide in. He does have a defensive card.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Maybe he thought legitimately it was his. I think he recognized pretty early on it wasn't. Because they played the tape and they slowed it down, he kind of looking around like a guy that found somebody's wallet and was looking to see if there was cash inside. But I, you know, it's not cheating, you know, it's etiquette, right? Like, I'd be curious how are you guys pitching me, you know? I'd take a look at it. I'd look under my name. Oh, sliders away? Okay. I mean, first of all, is anything on that sheet really going to surprise him? Probably not, but
if it does, then you're not doing
you're not in the right,
right
business. Yeah, exactly. If you don't know after this many years how guys are trying to attack you from the mound, then you really are a worse hitter than I thought you were. So, I don't know. Part of me is like, I mean, I can see why Montoya stuck up for his guys. Like, I'm not blaming him for asking or saying something to Cash, but like, part of me is like, so what? Shut up. Yeah. You know, like, I just feel like, all right, so he slid in there. Give the guy the benefit of the doubt. He saw a card. He could have thought it was his. I don't know when he decided it wasn't. But you know what? That's baseball. I mean, it's like, you know.
You left right. it on the plate, whether, you know,
yeah,
it wasn't
like
intentional.
You're,
I mean, I know if what you dropped it in the hallway outside the locker room, is it change it? Is it different?
Right.
I mean, you didn't use, you know, electronics or whatever to steal signs, and we know that that's. That's not kosher, but
right. I don't know. I'll tell a story, and this is I'm not trying to impugn anybody here, but I went to a party one time with a bunch of people, and I had like, I don't know. We were going to take an Uber. I had like $90 in cash, okay, in my pocket. We're all standing around, and ended up not using the money because, you know, everything was paid for, and it didn't need the Uber, so I ended up not using the money. But I was reaching in my pocket for tips and things like that. Anyway, I dropped most of it, okay? And, okay, bad on me, all right? So, like, the next day, somebody that was there shows up and said, and I'm talking about it. I'm like, oh, man, it was, you know, I lost, like, 70 bucks, whatever. He's like, oh, really? I found 70 bucks. Where? Like, we were to get, like, buy a, yeah. And I'm like, okay, well. Probably, and it's like, well, I actually got asked this question, like, can you identify the money? It's like, what? Like, I know the serial numbers? What are you talking about? So, I lost the money, right? He found it. Probably the right thing to do would be hand it back to me, but, you know, it fell out of my pocket. He found it, so I couldn't prove it was mine. Could have been somebody else's, I guess. I'm just saying, like, you lost it, right? So quit crying about it. It is what it is. I don't think it's a big. I just don't think this is a big story. Is this a big story in baseball?
I think it's overblown, but
yeah,
because I don't think there's a lot of, you know, I don't think there's a lot of info on those cards that aren't pretty much well known.
Yeah,
it's a reminder of, okay, you know, he likes sliders away, avoid that, or, you know, I don't know exactly what's on the cards. I haven't seen it, but I don't think it's necessarily proprietary information.
Well, it's got to be some kind of proprietary. I mean, it's got to be some kind of information.
Yeah,
but you're putting
info, yeah.
But you're putting it on a card, and you know a card can slip out of a guy's pocket. Yeah. It's not like you're sewing it to the inside of his jersey.
I don't think it's the advanced analytics that every team does and has their own methods of doing that. So I don't think that kind of stuff's in that, where it's,
right.
You know,
no, it just probably says, here's the hot zones on this hitter. You know, here's the, and like you said, if he doesn't know how people are trying to pitch him by now, I'm not saying I wouldn't have looked at it, but there can't be something in there that's going to surprise him.
Right.
I don't know. I just thought it was a non-story, and Kevin should have just said, yeah, so what?
All right.
My thought.
Mark asked a question about Florida State, and he says, does Coach Mike Norvell have to salvage the season to keep his job, or does he get another year regardless?
Well, he's 0-3, and they haven't been that since 100 years, I mean, since Bowden took over. So he's got to win something. Who's he going to beat at this point? I mean, Wake Forest, I was stunned. Like, normally when Florida State went to Wake Forest and they were to somehow win up there, they would have stormed the field, and there was barely anybody there, which might say more about Wake Forest, but it also says that nobody cared to come see him play Florida State. That brand is getting just damaged beyond belief.
They got Louisville this Saturday. Then they get Syracuse, North Carolina, UMass.
UMass they could
That's
could
homecoming.
Beat.
Then you get Clemson.
They could beat
NC State.
Nope.
Miami.
Nope.
Boston College.
Mm.
And you're not beating
Maybe.
Florida.
Nope.
At Florida, at the Swamp.
Listen, if he wins two games, he's fired.
Now, they're still paying Taggart.
I know.
And remember, that was an issue because they didn't have the money to fire Taggart.
Right, that's the thing. The problem are these buyouts. Why does college baseball or college football do that, by the way? I don't get it.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, sign a contract, you know, guarantee all or most of it or whatever, and just I don't understand how it's like. Well, if you're gonna not gonna honor my contract, you got to pay me $25 million. Well, okay. If you're not gonna win more than three games, you got to pay it back. You know what I mean? Look, I'm just saying. Like, mm-hmm. What about performance? Does that count?
Nope.
Nope.
It's just like baseball contracts. You sign a baseball contract.
I know.
I mean, football's the only one that doesn't have all guaranteed money.
I know. And it's an injury sport. And the owners will tell you, well, they could never have a sport if they guaranteed everything because people get hurt and they would run out of money. But I don't know. I just – listen, your brand is worth more than whatever that buyout is. And I don't – they have financial problems, and I don't know whether the boosters can scrape it up or not. But what do you do if he wins two games? I mean, really, that's a possibility at this point. They're 0-3.
It is. I mean, I think – and we'll talk to Matt Baker tomorrow about this.
We should. But he's got a lot of thoughts about Florida State.
Yeah, and he's talked about, you know, some of it's going to depend on what recruits are coming in next year. How do they look at the end of the year? I mean, there's going to be lots of things that go into it, particularly because of the money part. I mean, they're still paying Taggart.
Here's the thing I'm going to say.
So do they want to pay Norvell and then who are you going to get as a new coach to come in when you when you have money problems?
This came to play when USC, you know, is trying to hire a coach, and this was the discussion, and I think it applies with Florida State. Florida State hasn't been relevant for how long?
Since Jameis.
Okay, so that's 7 years. Okay.
Right? Maybe the season or two after, but, you know.
All right, but it's really relevant. That's 5 years. No, because he did 5 years in Tampa, 1 year in New Orleans.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm trying to remember. I mean, his second year.
You think after he left, they were still relevant?
They did well. I mean, because he didn't win his last game, did he? Didn't he come back the next year and not win the
championship? That's right. He came back. But
they had a good season. They had a good season.
But without him, they had a good season?
The year he left, I'd have to go back and look at the records.
Regardless, let's just say, for the argument's sake, let's say it's 6 years. Okay, 5-6 years. All right? Since they were relevant. Not champions, but relevant. All right? So how old were the kids that are being recruited now? What do they possibly remember about Florida State? In other words, Florida State doesn't mean anything to these guys other than it's in the state of Florida. They don't remember Deion Sanders. They don't know who Bobby Bowden was.
No, but their parents do.
But I'm just telling you.
Yeah.
And Sean Salisbury said this about USC. He's like, they don't know student body, right? They could care less. Mm-hmm. They could tell you more about the uniform combinations at Oregon than they can tell you about Bobby Bowden. They live in a TikTok world, okay?
Yep.
A TikTok, not a YouTube world, not a Twitter world, a TikTok world, where you can sit there for 4 hours and rifle through, you know, what's happening right now and right now only. Although there is some nice songs that are from other eras that my kids are getting to learn, which is nice. But my point is like, these kids that are coming out today, where can I play? Where can I go when I'm going to go to the NFL? Where can I win a national championship, right? That's still, I mean, and now who's going to pay me the most money, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where can I get the biggest deal off the field? That's all they care about.
Florida State in 2016, Jimbo went 10-3.
Okay, 10-3.
They finished eighth in both polls.
So here's my
and
take
then
on
17
this.
Is, you know, he came in and was fired near the end of the year or left. And then Higgins took over as an interim at the end.
My take is that you're going to need either an incredibly well-known, dynamic head coach that the kids will get behind and go play for him, or you're going to fall off the map, because it's just the brand has taken too much of a hit. And it's all about recruiting. It's about getting players. It's not about – I don't think Norvell has forgotten football. I don't think he was a terrible coach at Memphis. Mm-mm. You can't get the players, man. You can't get them. You got to develop them. But
it started with Taggart, which was a reach.
Right.
I mean, Taggart had two good years at USF. Then he goes to Oregon for a year.
He was over his head there.
It was a dream job for him. And Florida State, instead of hiring the best candidate, went and hired the guy who wanted the job the most.
Right.
I'll equate it to one in my past I'm familiar with, Brady Hoke at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Brady loves Michigan. It was his dream job. He wanted it more than anybody else, but it wasn't the right hire.
Michigan man.
You know, just because somebody wants it bad doesn't mean that's, you know, you got to go hire the best person.
Rich Rod wasn't the right guy either, though.
Well, no. That was before Hoke, and that was...
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the AD that wanted to change Michigan football.
Mm-hmm.
That was a huge mistake. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's been 5 years since Florida State, you know. Assuming they don't finish in the top 25, it'll be the fifth straight year they don't finish in the polls.
Yeah, well, 5 years ago, these kids were in middle school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much football they were watching. I don't know what Florida State meant to them, if anything. It's just, I just don't.
Although the transfer portals can change things, too, so.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a quarterback.
You'll have an opportunity to play at Florida State, presumably.
Presumably, but are you getting, if I'm in the transport portal, now, granted, you know, Justin Fields was in the transfer, he went to Ohio State from Georgia because
Joe Burrow was.
There's always somebody, right? But I don't know that I'm going there. I don't know. I think Florida State's brand is just taking an enormous, enormous hit. And I think, you know, whether Mullen wins the SEC or goes to the SEC title game, or maybe they crap out and, you know, they don't get there. I don't know. Because I tend to think Georgia's going to beat them. But Florida's still a really good brand, man. You know? Mm-hmm. Florida's really good. They had two or three first-round picks. You know? Kyle Trask is playing for the Bucs.
Florida made it to the SEC championship game last year. Played Alabama there.
Right. Everybody saw that game. Everybody mm-hmm. knows Alabama. They watched the SEC. It's the greatest conference in football. You know, maybe the greatest in all of sports. So you're in the SEC, you're playing for championships, you're playing for chips. Florida is where it's at, man. I'm all about it. Great Big Gator. And I'm not negative recruiting as Florida State because, believe me, I spent plenty of time up there. I'm not – I just feel like that I don't know that you're gonna have to develop some guys that weren't your 4- and 5-star recruits because I don't know how many guys are going to go there. You know, and then you go have a 2-win season. Or a 3-win season, not playing a bowl game, get your coach fired again. You're going to need a dynamic coach that somehow people recognize that will go play for him and say, yeah, I remember that guy at such and such a place. You know, he's a good dude. I'd play for him. But I don't – these kids have all kinds of ideas, man. You know, and now there's even an extra layer of stuff with, you know, what they can get off the field. But it's sad. I mean – that program, it's gone down in a hurry. And I think it started, Jimbo left it not in good shape.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, bad on him for doing that. And then Taggart, I think, was over his head and it got worse. And now this guy inherited a mess and it was COVID. And, you know, he doesn't.
Usually those transitions are because the guy before.
Screwed it up.
You know, Urban Meyer, if you look at when he leaves programs.
Not better than he found them.
You know, Ohio State may be the only one that's not because they promoted Ryan Day within, but.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I'm concerned.
All right. Craig had tweeted us and says, why does Jeremy Foley, the former athletic director at Florida, escape the blame for the football program now being average? After Urban, his hires really killed the brand, and he also let the facilities fall behind. Until they beat Bama, the program is not back.
I don't know. Jeremy Foley was there a long time, man. He hired a lot of coaches, Billy Donovan included. I don't think you just look at football. Yeah, Muschamp didn't work out. Who was was it McElwain? Who was the other guy?
Yeah, Jim McElwain.
McElwain. He still got to the SEC title game, I think. Won 10 games a couple times, and that didn't work out. I don't know. I don't know that Jeremy killed the brand. I mean, like we just documented, I think the brand is fine. I mean, if they go to the SEC title game and beat Alabama, they're in the national playoffs. So what evidence do you have that they've killed it?
I don't think you have to beat Bama to be back either. I mean, not many teams beat Bama, period.
Right.
Not many beat Clemson or Ohio State. I mean,
but here's the thing though about, let me just, and I agree with you, like no one's beaten Saban lately, right? But here's the thing. If I'm hiring a coach for the University of Florida, my expectations are to win the SEC. Mm-hmm. That's why I'm playing, is to win, not to go to the SEC. I think they could go to the SEC than they have gone with lesser coaches. You know, they have.
Mm-hmm.
They've gotten there. I'm about championships.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see Dan Mullen win a ship. If you can't win a championship, I want the next guy. Like that's, and so, yeah, that means beating Alabama. Sorry, they're in the SEC. You know who else is going to be there? Texas. Oklahoma. I mean, like,
no, Texas doesn't worry me. That's another brand.
No, but I'm just
really
saying it's gonna get strong. It's gonna get, you know.
That's a brand that's really gone down. They haven't been relevant
you're right.
years.
No, you're right.
Since Vince Young, really.
You're right. But
the one difference they have money.
Well, they have a ton of money.
They haven't figured out how to spend it properly to fix it, but they have money.
Yeah. It's not unreasonable to expect Florida to win SEC titles. I think Mullen can win 10 games every year. And I think he can go to the SEC title game about, I don't know, twice in 4 years. But is he the guy that can win it all? I think he's got one quarterback that might be able to do it, but it's not the guy that's playing. And again, he played really well against Alabama, but I still think Richardson's going to be the guy that's going to wind up taking him there. He needs a Dak Prescott. You know, he needs a guy of that ilk. And he may get it. He may have them. But Florida's brand, I disagree with that questioner. I don't think anything's wrong with Florida's brand. That place was lit the other night. I haven't seen Florida like, I mean, it's great to get Alabama in there, right? But that stadium was on fire. That was a great college football game. Great one. That's what college football should be. And if you're at the University of Florida, man, you're proud of that. You just wish you'd have won the game. But they had nothing to be embarrassed about, and hopefully they'll see him again. You know, great questions as usual, though. Nice variety. We had some college football mixed in there. Speaking of college football, it's a great segue. We're going to talk to Matt Baker, our college football writer. He'll tell you all about the Alabama and the Florida game and what the situation is with Mike Norvell at Florida State. USF headed out to BYU.
Late game, 10:15 Saturday
game.
Night.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to stay up. We got to stay up to get that result. Maybe not too late, but that's going to be a tough road trip for them. The Bucs are back at work, getting ready for what I think will be their hardest game or the toughest opponent they'll play this year. I think it'll be the LA Rams.
On the road. I mean, I think Buffalo at home is tough, but that's at home.
Yeah, but that's at home. But New Orleans is tough. I'm not saying that'll be easy. They're capable. We've talked about them in the NFC South.
It's also the first road game with fans in 2 years for this.
First
with
road game
fans.
In 2 years. Yeah. And you know what? Like people say, well, what's the big deal? Well, it is a big deal because communication is not good. And so that affects the offense. It's the offense that's been carrying this team, right? Mm-hmm. They've been carrying this team. And then the team will be behind the Rams. It's a new stadium, which is really nice, I hear. It's also your first road trip, and you still haven't really traveled. I mean, they went to Houston for a preseason game, but there's a routine to traveling. And if you're new on this team, you got to get, you know, a long flight. Like, all that stuff matters, man. These are the games played by human beings. So, you know, hopefully they've had a couple COVID cases. Kevin Minter was one of them. So you hope that doesn't become a thing. But, yeah, I'm with you. It's you got to remember it's in a hostile environment, and yet, you know, the Rams were able to come in here, you know, and win. And the Bucs have gone out there and won before. I think they played them at USC the last time. But this to me could wind up having playoff implications. And I still think that San Francisco is going to win a ton of games in that division. They could split with Arizona. They could split with the Rams and still win the division. Seattle, same thing. It's a really tough division, but something tells me that Matthew Stafford is going to be Tom Brady, you know, esque in that he's going to turn that franchise and get them to where they want to go, which is right back home, by the way, where the Super Bowl is in their own home stadium, much like Tom did. They've got it all. Not a great running back cast, but they won't try to run the ball anyway. Great coach. This will be, to me, if the Bucs go out there and they handle these guys, like really handle them, the defense plays well, they win the game, Brady looks good, you're gonna, all the talk on money about him going back to Boston is they may not, no, get ready for this because I've already heard it. The talk on money would be not only going to kill the Patriots, they're not going to lose a game. That's what people are going to be talking about. Who's going to beat these guys? You know, and let Jameis go out there and play another tough, another bad game, and New Orleans lose again, and the Bucs go and win, it's going to be on. You know, people are going to be all over them. But yeah, it's going to, the next 2 weeks are going to tell us a lot about this football team. And look, if they're 3-1, that's okay. They're not out of anything. But this would be a big one for them to get, a real big one. I think it's going to be a great test. So we look forward to that.
The Lightning report again, today.
We got the 10. Yeah, I mean, this is hockey already. The shortest off season in the history of hockey, right?
Yep. Media days today. The first practice will be on Thursday.
Incredible.
So 60 players in camp to start. They just got done with the prospect tournament, which was great. And Lightning went 3-0 in the prospect tournament against Nashville, Carolina, and Florida. So
they got prospects.
Yeah.
Hockey's here. Hockey's fun.
Yeah. Opening night is 3 weeks from yesterday, Tuesday.
Who they got?
The Penguins in town.
Oh, wow.
When they'll they didn't raise play the banner.
Last year, right?
No, they did not. They only played 18 or 7 teams last year in the regular season. So back to a full slate and every team and traveling and all that. So
that'll be fun, man. We got it all. This is the best time of year if you're a sports junkie. You've got college football getting up in full tilt. The NFL now is running weekly. You've got Major League Baseball coming down to the pennant races here in the final weeks, almost to October, and then hockey. So you got them all. Got them all going, man. So, yeah, get your popcorn ready and your TVs ready because there's no shortage of sports on every night. It's going to be fun. Thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow again with our college football writer, Matt Baker, to get you ready for all the weekend games. For Steve Burstyn, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Have a great day, everybody.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.